What's up, everybody? Welcome back into the Sorry to Interrupt podcast. We've got all three of us tonight, and Tom, I know you were anxious for the release date, but Full Swing is out, and we're going to talk about episode one. How we doing, boys?
I'm good. Tommy, welcome back, buddy.
Thank you. Yeah, honestly, it kind of crept up on me after I'd mentioned it. I just Googled, like, when does it start? And then I texted you guys that we got to do the first episode one. I know a lot of other places are doing, just dump the whole full thing out, their opinions, but I want to do it a little differently. I'd like to watch every episode. Us boys don't have time to binge watch. You know, we have things called jobs.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's the damn truth. And also, I think that we can put a little more concentration into one instead of being like, oh, wait, was that from the first episode? Was that from the third? I don't really remember some of that. So I think we're well prepared, Tom. This is a good call.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. First thing, overall takeaways from the first episode. Like, give me your the first thought when you think of that episode that came to mind. Will, why don't you lead us off?
My first thought is it could be better.
Elaborate.
Listen, I understand the whole thing, you know, before the merge of Liv and PGA, but I felt like the first 18 to 20 minutes was just about, we hate this Liv guy, we don't want him to win. And it just went back and forth, and I understand that's the narrative in golf. But I wanted to hear more about these guys talking about, oh, this is what I got to do in 2024 now. You know, I struggled at this tournament. I struggled at this tournament. It was all about, oh, well, if you join Liv, like, we don't respect you. You're all about the money. Like, that's what it was for, like, the first 20 minutes of the episode.
Yeah, no argument out of me there. Go ahead, Sean.
Yeah, Tom, for me, my takeaway was really hearing Rory express freely the animosity that he had towards Liv. And
honestly, though, I will say he's a class act, because, like, going out there and playing a practice round at the Masters with Brooks and whatnot, stuff like that, like, he didn't have to do that.
No, but you could see that there was still animosity in the amount of bullets that he was taking for the PGA. And he said, even in the episode, that he's probably the closest to Monahan out of anybody on the tour. But as the episode progressed, you saw how much it was truly weighing on him. And Tom, we were chronicling all of this last year in real time. So to hear from his mouth everything, and then as the episode ends, you see the merger announced, where everybody's saying, what the fuck? Nobody knows what's going on. And you could really, I think the episode ends with Rory saying, like, right, like, do I wish I just never did any of this? So
a little hot take for me, boys. Like, I really never liked Rory. It's a weird take because everybody loves Rory. But I, you know, I just saw this cocky kid that thinks he's going to be better than Tiger. You know, that's all I saw. And obviously growing up, Tiger Woods is Tiger Woods and there's nobody else. And then this kid coming in, winning, you know, four majors in his first 5 years, and he's like, oh, I'm going to be better than Tiger Woods. Not that he said that. Then I gained respect for him taking all these bullets and playing golf at the same time for the trying to be the face of people. He didn't sign up. He's like, you know what? I need to do this.
That was one of my takeaways out of the first episode, I didn't realize how much Rory had to do.
I was like, I respect Rory McIlroy right now.
Yeah, I totally agree. That was my two. I had really, Will kind of gave me a second takeaway there with the Rory thing, because I really, last year I was like, oh, how much is he really doing? You know, how is it really weighing on him? But clearly he was doing an absolute shit ton. On top of that, for me, it was just like, I'm annoyed again. It's like, we already got to the players in the first episode. Like, again, with the timeline, Sean, it's like, we're going to bounce around like last time. I thought that was one of the bigger complaints. I'm glad that they didn't explain to us the rules of golf again. I'm glad we got that out of the way. But let's take a little more feedback. Like, now I have to go back in time, probably in episode two. Like, we're already halfway through basically the season. And the episode, I mean, it was awesome.
You already saw two majors in the
exactly.
First episode.
Also, I guess Rom's not going to be featured that prevalently, because that would have been the episode to have him in, right?
Yeah, that would be.
Yeah, to me, I think too is you see Rory and him expressing very candidly his lack of desire to see Brooks or another Liv player win. And keep in mind, this is him speaking about it retrospectively at the time, from last April at the Masters to May at the PGA. And then I'm sure afterwards it really didn't bother him as much as it did in real time. But yeah, I can totally understand him trying to be the what would you want to say, kind of like playing the campaign game, playing that 9-hole round with Brooks, trying to just be very, very presidential about it almost. And then you see at the end, Rory feels like it's really all for naught. And you know what, Tom? I agree with you. When you see that all the shit he had to do and all the questions he had to answer, and then that you see the terrible performance at the Masters, not even making the cut, it does make a little more sense.
Yeah, and then I know that the PGA Tour is heavily involved in this and whatnot, and they're not going to say a single bad thing about the PGA Tour, but you know, and Rory's such a class act, he's not going to say anything, but like Will said it best, it's like, if you're Rory, like internally, he has to be so pissed off, because it's like, just to go back to the talking about Liv and PGA Tour, we've already chronicled it, like you said, Sean, I did the entire timeline when these leagues were being talked about before, like pre-COVID, and the PGA Tour just turned their nose to it, and look what happened. But now it's like, you're going to play the 9/11 card and you're going to say, we're never going to deal with these guys, and Rory's all behind it and whatnot, of course. And then you have the Delaware meetings and blah, 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 all that stuff. Then you come out with your new elevated tournaments and the raised purses and whatever. And then you just turn around on, like you said, July 23rd, not that anything's come of it, and you just merge with them. It's like, I know it's gotta be, if you gave Rory true serum, he's gotta be like, fuck this, and just throw his hands up and just say, I just want to play golf.
Yeah, that's you know, I had a couple points from the show, and I have 2 points first, and then I have 2 questions for both of you guys. My first point is, like, you talk about Rory McIlroy being the great human being he is. He's one of the first person to congratulate Brooks Koepka after he won the PGA. You know, a live guy. He congratulated him. The other point I have is, well, actually, this is more of a question for you guys. How much, like, you saw Rory struggle at the Masters, and then you saw him play good until Sunday at the PGA Championship. How much do you think all this other bullshit weighs on his golf game?
A ton. I mean, proof is in the pudding, right? He missed a cut at the Masters. He won no majors last year. But, I mean, at the end of the day, obviously, he's still a top 5 player in the world because he's a great golfer, but... You know, Rory said it himself. He felt physically like he was in the best position he's been in a long time to win a major, and he didn't even make the cut. So, you know, obviously I think it was tailored to show how stressed out Rory was behind the scenes. Clearly there's a little bit of production with that. But at the same time, like, now that we got kind of behind the curtain, it's fucking tough for that guy, and I really feel for him because... He got dragged through the mud. He was the face of it. And then the guys that actually make the decisions, which I think is fucking... Jay Monahan, it's unbelievable that he still has any type of a job at any company, much less the one that he ruined. And they just went behind his back, basically. I mean, I'm sure he knew about it, of course.
Well, Sean, this is the question I had for you, too. This is my second question. And Tom, you can elaborate on this as well. And watching the first episode, and I watched the first season as well... Sean, do you think that anything that Rory has said about, like, the live and how he feels about it, how he doesn't, you know, respect the other golfers, do you think that was fed to him, like the PGA said, you need to say this?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think ethically he does struggle with what that stands for and what accepting the money from that government and entity does. But can I also say, too, is just to kind of feed off of what Tom was saying to the last question you posed, Will, you saw how much it meant to Rory to win that fifth one before Koepka did. And for him not to get that, that seemed to weigh on him just as heavily as all the questions and water carrying he was doing for the PGA. But for sure, I think you see it's become very fluid where up until right now, there's rumors of would he actually go to live, because the question is if this merger's happening and it's going to happen pretty soon, like everybody's kind of thrown out there in the ether, then why not go grab the bag and do that if it gets you a year and you can make an exorbitant amount of money and
especially
anyway, who cares?
Especially they talked about it in the episode. The only thing that matters is major tournaments. Like, yeah, these other tournaments don't matter.
But
why wouldn't a guy like
the overlying thing?
Why would Rory go and make $1 billion to play and live, play three rounds, get to wear shorts, dominate, and then go to a Masters, go to a Players Championship, go to a PGA Championship and win those if all he cares about is Masters, not PGA Tour wins.
Well, remember, just to point this out, obviously Rory's a top five player in the world, but the reason why, an overlying reason why some of these guys have not left and a reason why Jon Rahm probably did leave is because the LIV guys are not getting OWGR points. So every day that they don't get a win or a place on the PGA Tour, they're losing points. So guys like a Rory McIlroy, yes, they have eligibility now, but if he doesn't go out and get one of these Masters, eventually his eligibility will be gone regardless of all of his other major wins. So that's another overlying reason. Do I think it's Rory's main reason?
I will say this, though. I think that's eventually going to be... That's going to be rectified.
I think that's going to be right. Yeah, exactly. Because Jon Rahm wouldn't go there, being a top 10 golfer in the world.
Well, I think it's going to be rectified because of
that he couldn't.
I think it's going to be rectified because of the fact that I don't think we will see OWGR points allotted to LIV tournaments because of the fact that it goes against every rule that the OWGR was created for. But you will see these players be allowed to play for LIV and the PGA Tour. So that's how I think it'll be rectified because they'll still be able to earn their OWGR.
At the end of the day, like if I'm Phil Mickelson, who's at the end of his career, and a organization says, hey, here's $800 million, come play for us, knowing that I'm in my 50s, almost 60s, like, am I not going to take the money?
Well, obviously, Phil is the one who orchestrated the entire tour.
Poulter, if I'm an Ian Poulter or, you know, like, obviously I'm going to take the money.
I don't fault any of the guys, especially the older guys, for taking the money, but don't sit here and tell me that you only care about playing competitive golf in the majors and you're trying to grow the game. If you're going to tell me you took it for the bag, like Dustin Johnson did, like pretty much Jon Rahm did, then fine. Then that's fine by me.
I respect those guys that took it for the bag and they mentioned they took it for the bag.
Yep. Also, Rahm left with the preliminary merger already being set in stone. So in his opinion, in his mind, I'm going to go play less golf for more money for now.
That's another funny thing, though.
Eventually, these two entities are gonna merge, and we're going to have a whole new, brand new system. And then everything will go back to normal, and I'll be able to pick and choose what tournaments and events I want to play in. And that's exactly how it's going to be.
That's another funny thing, and I feel like we didn't mention this when we talked about July 23rd and whatnot, so it's good to bring it up here. Does that piece of paper even matter? Because part of that deal was that they weren't going to poach any more players. And then they took Tyrrell Hatton, who's a top 50, top probably 30 player in the world, and Jon Rahm, who was the world number one and just came off a Masters and a U.S. Open a few years before that. So,
yeah, I mean, it's just the whole merger thing. Like, you know, I think it was the PGA panicking because they could probably, what would happen to the PGA? God forbid. What would happen, even though he's at the end of his career, if Tiger Woods went to LIV, if Rory went to LIV, if Scheffler went to LIV?
Well, of course, and I think the PGA got blindsided by it, and that's honestly, truly a shame on them, and that's why we're in the position we are, where golf is fractured, and it's good for the players because they're getting more money on both sides, but who does it hurt? It hurts the fans. We get more commercials. We get shittier tournaments.
I don't want to watch CW11 where it comes 2:00 and I have to watch Sabrina the Teenage Witch. I want to watch the last three holes.
I'm sorry you had to watch that.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry too.
Listen, the way the episode starts and you see everything Rory's doing for the PGA and how he's pledged allegiance to the PGA and keeping that going and saying from a competitive standpoint, it is the best golf in the world, to how the episode ends where you see an entire mindset switch of being like, hey, does this even really matter anymore? And what after all I did to just not even be consulted by Monahan that this is happening.
Well, yeah, Rory's words were, I just wasted the last 12 months of my career.
Right. So I think from that vantage point, you're starting to see him come to grips with the fact that nothing even he can do is going to save what the PGA has turned into, which is a complete and utter shit show. And we see it, Tom, as we do our picks and our recaps every weekend. of the, no offense to the guys, but the fields really are diluted. They really suck, and you can talk yourself into the Knapps and, you know, the Matons and of the world.
Keith, but Mitchell's.
It's not what we want to see. The of best course. Players are not playing.
Yeah, yeah, and listen, I think
I like the guy. I don't want to see Joel Damon. I don't care.
That's my guy.
That's Sean's okay. guy, but I understand what you're saying, and, you know, I think to answer the question about Rory, I mean, he stepped down from the Player Advisory Council this year. I'm looking at the list, and I just to refresh my memory, and yeah, he's down, and I think he was one of the player directors. He might have been the chairman as well, and he's completely off, so clearly it did affect his game. We went off on a little live tangent there. I'm glad we got to hear Will's opinions. I think they pretty much, you know, mirror ours. Can we talk about Brooksy real quick, my fucking boy?
Yeah, I mean, look at what Brooks was saying, though. And it's so cool to watch this, Tom, because, you know, we were documenting this literally every week last year and talking about, wow, is he actually healthy? And I remember having distinctly the conversation with you leading up to Augusta. Can these guys who have only been playing 54-hole events sustain the endurance of 72 holes? And it sounds so stupid now that we actually had that conversation, but so did a lot of people in golf media and just the general sports media in totality. So to see Brooks, the confidence he had in his interview saying that I'm totally healthy and just reliving that, I thought was really cool, because he easily could have won Augusta, and then to end up winning the PGA was really something to behold.
I mean, Brooks is that one of the guys, well, you know, me and Tom will talk tomorrow about the gambling thing. But, like, Tom, you can tell me I'm wrong that any major tournament, you're not going to bet $100 to be Brooks Koepka in the top five in any major? You could – I probably throw
as long as he's healthy, you can pretty much lock it in, honestly.
Yeah.
He's a killer. He really is.
If he's playing the Phoenix Open, you know, maybe not.
Although, who's won it?
He's playing the Players Champion. Yeah, I know. But I'm just trying to think. The Wyoming Open, you know.
I agree. He doesn't care. And I mean, he left for live partly due to injury, but also partly because all he gave a shit about was the majors. And yeah, we got to keep an eye on him in what, about a month's time, Sean? Is it?
That's exactly right. Yeah, I think we're 5 weeks out from Augusta.
The best part of this whole episode, in my opinion, was JT goes in there and you could just, honestly, I get real bad secondhand awkwardness, and that PGA dinner or whatever it was, everybody, did you guys notice how red those guys' faces were because of how awkward it was?
Yeah. And then when Brooks was talking, JT couldn't even look at him.
Oh yeah, you know, I thought all I could think of there was, like, how swaggy is that he said that shit and he had no place to say it and then went out and kicked the shit out of all those guys. And then my second thought was, imagine Bryson did that and then missed the cut. Obviously, Bryson's never won the PGA.
There wasn't a big enough steak knife in that room to cut the tension in the air. Oh my God.
That was wild. It was uncomfortable, and that happened like a year ago, and we're watching it on TV. Oh my God.
Yeah, I just the one of the funniest things about the episode is, you know, one of my guys, and Tom, it's one of your guys too, Colin Morikawa. You saw him twice, and the first two times it was just about him playing golf, and the last time he just said, "What the fuck?"
I know.
It was just perfect.
Now, Colin was great in the first season when he bitched out Adidas as well, and he's just a pretty, like, straightforward guy. Will, had you watched this last year when it came out, or did you just binge it?
Yeah, I watched season one.
I was curious if you had just binged it and then watched episode one as well. Did anyone cheat?
No, I watched it last year.
Honesty is the best policy. Did anybody cheat and watch another episode yet?
No, I didn't. I did not. I paused Sean? It. I went back to another Netflix show. I did not watch the second episode. I did see Upcoming. I saw that. But
Sean?
I did not watch any second episode.
No, I didn't. I just wanted to watch the one, take it all in. Also had some Curb to watch.
Yeah, I had some Curb to watch as well, which I just finished up, which we'll be talking about soon. You guys got any other thoughts on this episode?
Well, I'll let you guys jump into Curb right now. And, you know, Tom, we missed it last week, but I put some bets in the podcast with me and Sean. And Sean, you want to tell them about UNLV Moneyline?
Oh, you're the one to do it. Come on now.
UNLV playing San Diego State. I said UNLV Moneyline. They were +2. I'm like, they're going to win this game outright. And that's what they did.
Wow.
I said, anytime Kentucky – and granted, I looked at the over this weekend with Kentucky – and the over was 177. And I'm like, there's no way that's hitting. And it was like 52-52 with like 9 minutes left. I was like, yep, either Vanderbilt's going to win this game or Kentucky's going to win by four.
Yep. No.
Bill's been on a heater.
Listen, listen. It's okay, Sean, because this gambling pod's going to come out tomorrow. And we're going to be, this is going to be a 52 week a year thing. And Will's going to have to talk about some losses. He can't just sprinkle in all the W's in here.
Oh,
and
I will definitely talk about
bad losses. And I got, listen, let me tell you, when I come on tomorrow, my bet, it's not going to be what you expect. It's going to be, I've called up some experts on some different sports and whatnot. I'm going out there with the bets. It's not just going to be NBA and that's it.
Oh. Are we talking about like Russian hockey?
No, we might. Listen, it's going to be a little obscure. It's going to be a little parlay that I hit up an expert I know on the sport. So I just wanted a little spark to start the pod.
It's a little too soon for your boy Field Yates. It's a little too soon.
That's true. All right, everybody.
Wait, before I go and let you guys talk about Curb, Tom, give me a sperm bank golfer this week that I need to bet on.
Sperm bank golfer this week at the AP?
Yep.
It's already teed off. I'm going to go with Ricky
top
Fowler.
Five. Top five.
Top
yeah,
five.
I was hoping you were saying
Ricky Fowler.
He's tried there. Yep.
That's one of my guys.
Ricky Fowler on Sundays.
There we go. There we go. All right, everybody. We'll be talking to you soon.
All right, everybody. We are back in, and thanks again to Will and Tom. I didn't know that Will was such a golf savant. That was a fun discussion with him.
Yeah, you know, that's another reason why the genius of me bringing Will on is he's going to, I know, obviously I know Will Smith my whole life, and he's going to surprise you. He's got a lot of knowledge when it comes to sports about pretty much everything. So we can have him on and he can hold his own in pretty much any sports conversation.
Yeah, he absolutely can. So that was fun, full swing. That will be a regular occurrence on the pod. But now, Tom, we'll get back into what we do so well. And we did not talk PGA. We did not talk the Cognizant Classic, formerly known as
and
the
I was
Honda.
Not ready for it after my my trip. I had not watched any PGA. I had played golf myself, so.
You said something that was startling to me before we did our Monday rundown where you said, I am all golfed out, and I did not know that was possible for you. But I guess there is a limit.
Yeah, I got to be honest. I don't feel that way anymore. The dust has settled, and I've had a little more clarity, and I was like, you know what? On the back nine, I hit like probably four of the six fairways I needed to hit, and I had three or four birdie putts, like a couple green and regs, and I was like, I kind of turned it around. I mean, the courses down there are amazing. I loved the Muni, Charleston Muni. It was great. It was just a swamp. I laid the sod over a million balls. I may have forgotten how to chip, but that's what the South will do to you with that tight Bermuda, combined with it's basically just like pulling up like an entire pelt every time you hit the ball down there when it's wet. And then I got eaten alive by bugs, even by putting bug spray on. And I'm too old for that shit now. So I bought a 2-in-1 bug spray on Amazon. 2-in-1 sunscreen bug spray. Kept asking if it existed. Nobody could confirm it. It does.
All right. So you're all set for the humidity of Western Connecticut and Westchester County.
I am good to go, and I'm good to go to Texas, probably a next year trip, but me and Will will be making the trip down.
The humidity ain't too bad here in Austin, but if we went more towards Houston, it'd be a motherfucker.
Oh, I bet you it would. I've heard Houston's one of those cities that if you go there, you know, whatever, but you can skip it. It's not a destination.
I haven't been. I don't have much desire to. I almost went last year for UConn playing in the national championship game.
Ooh.
That was in Houston. But I'm not even going to bother telling you what the prices were for the tickets. So, that wasn't happening. But, Tom, you were not that far away from the Cognizant Classic at the Palm Beaches. Probably a good, 7 hours or so, 6 hours. But Austin Ekroat gets this win. And to me, honestly, this is another guy that we're just going to have to pay attention to with this diluted field, and I'm not going to continue to beat a dead horse. It just is what it is. We're going to have to see a lot. We're going to be seeing a lot of guys that we wouldn't have on normal picks or predictions on the leaderboards, but here we are, and I don't want to take anything away from them, but that's just the state of PGA golf right now, as we talked about with Will.
Yeah, I mean, it is what it is in a diluted field. This is the Honda Cognizant. What the hell are we calling this thing?
It's the Cognizant Classic at the Palm Beaches. It's the first year under the new name. It was previously the Honda.
Hmm.
Which used to not have much of a field anyway, to be fair to the tournament.
To be fair, yes. Yeah, not much to say here. Your boy Billy Horschel played pretty well. It looks like he's starting to figure a few things out with those swing changes he made. He's starting to creep up the leaderboard. And Dunlap played pretty well for you. And obviously our boy Minwoo, who finished T2 last week.
Yep.
He finished in the top 20 as well. And you waxed me this week. What can I say about it? I didn't even look at really any of the other guys. Once I saw that you had two guys ahead of mine, I was like, the math's pretty simple there with Cole finishing DFL. I didn't have much of a shot. So you are leading, I am leading you 4-3, but you are nipping now.
Yeah, I am. I'm starting to make a little bit of a comeback. I've now taken two in a row, so we're going to see if we can continue this week at the Arnold Palmer.
At the Arnold Palmer. The only thing I can remember from the Arnold Palmer was when Bryson was trying to drive. I don't know if he was trying to drive the green or right next to it, and he was just hitting absolute tanks out there.
Yeah, that sounds like Bryson, particularly about 5 years ago, Bryson.
Yeah, pretty much. God damn it, that was 5 years ago? Yeah.
I think it was 2019 or 2020.
Yeah, give or take. That's insane, and it's also depressing. All right, Sean. you got the W last week. I got my pen out here. Sometimes you talk a little too fast for what I write, but I can't read my handwriting as it is. But let's hear it. You have the honor on the tee.
Well, I corrected that last week, and I'm going to do it again. And this time I'm also going to make it a little easier for you because – you know, I care about being very precise with my words and my cadence, and you know, that's what a Ridgefield education does for you.
Mm.
But I'll tell you this: I'm going to finally give you my fourth as the winner this week too, to make it a little easier for you. So, just to start off today with my foursome, I'm going with Mr. 5 o'clock hitter himself, Patrick Cantlay. You know, this is an event that just screams top 10 for him, and I'm gonna capitalize.
smart guy we gotta get you a bookie.
Yeah, that's it. Listen, brother, you're dialed in for a little over a year. You get to pick up on some trends. I got Corey Connors also in my foursome for this week. Just a name that I saw floated out there. I'm going with my boy Jason Day in my foursome this week as well. You know, I like Jason Day, and I haven't picked him yet this year in a foursome, so that was due. And my winner, I got Victor Hovland. He hasn't been playing the best golf, but that's okay. This is a tournament. Let's get right. This is tune-up season a month before the Masters, where obviously we expect him to play very well. So give me Victor Hovland as the winner here at the API for this second week of March.
I think Victor Hovland's your favorite player, if you had to pick one. Like, Brooks is mine. I think Victor's yours.
Scotty is still my favorite.
Really?
Because I'm amazed at how incredible he is for having no putter whatsoever.
Yeah.
The fact that he can finish top 10, sometimes top 5, sometimes narrowly miss a win with having such an important element of his game essentially absent for the better part of a year, it's incredible to me. It's like those pitchers that have absolutely no breaking ball, but they go out there and just shove for six innings because their fastball is just blowing by guys.
Yeah, I agree with you. I can attest to the no putting thing. That was another thing I really struggled with down south. I don't know why. I felt like I was just I felt like I was there physically, but mentally, I felt like I was hovering above my body. But I'll give you my pick.
Well, it sounds like you weren't in the best of headspace either, so. That could affect the putting.
It could affect everything, but I'm doing all right. I'm good to go, and I'm going to give you my picks, and I'm going to beat your ass this week. Number one, I already mentioned it earlier in the podcast in our first segment because Will made me make a pick. He put me on the spot. I'm taking Ricky Fowler. Number two,
yep.
I'm taking Team Rose, Justin Rose. I love his game. He's just a steady Eddie. I think he's a money top 30. Number three, I got to put my boy in there. Maybe my favorite golfer. I don't know if I disrespected him there over Brooksy, and that's Max Homa. And then number four, maybe your possible Masters champion then leaves for LIV, although he's talked a whole lot of junk about it, Willie Z. Will Zalatoris.
All right. Healthy again, man. Good to see that back holding up.
And that, and you know what? I was looking up and down the board, and I was like, all I thought about was that new putting stroke and that new putter he's got, and I could just see him rolling it in.
Yeah.
All right. You want to talk about Kerb? I mean, you need to just, maybe you need to recap it for me because my head is still spinning, and I finished watching it about 10 minutes before you, Will, and I got on the horn.
Well, is fish stuck or fish sick?
Didn't you see it sneeze?
How he can't leave well enough alone, even the most minor things. And I think I'm a pretty observant guy, but there are certain times where I am just completely head in the clouds. And Larry he acknowledges and notices everything. And then, of course, has to think something's wrong, which very well could have been. I think the fish died.
Nah, he went downtown. He's
he
happy.
Downtown. He's very happy fish. Very happy fish. Go sit down now. You know, what I love about it, obviously, is the lawyer's office to start making comments on the name.
He ties it together so well.
The temple. And, yeah, listen, the last name that they were going with, terrible. Mantle is a winner. Larry's 1,000% right. But then asking about whose semen it is, it's just – this is a guy, this is your lawyer. He's going to help you win this case. You're not even going to have to go to trial. And because he mucks up an entire relationship, obviously,
we knew he was going to trial.
To file the grievance. So it's incredible.
But there is, you forgot to mention, because so much was going on in this episode, there is a light at the end of the tunnel. I know where this is probably not the last we're going to hear of her, but Larry may have gotten rid of his girlfriend for at least 10 minutes.
I'm just happy Grote's disease is finally back.
Yeah, you know, I'm glad we're getting off this COVID train and we're back on Grote's.
That's though something that the CDC really has to worry about. I mean, it affected both Funkhauser and Larry.
Oh, Funkhauser, by the way, Vin Diesel had his fucking fastball.
Fucking Vin Diesel. Dude. I can't.
By the way, everybody, I the first time it was a legit mistake for future reference, though, this name I'm getting wrong on purpose. I hope everybody has figured that out by now.
Yes, your voice is very much giving it away this time, as opposed to last time where I tried to correct you and give you a second chance and you still didn't get it. But yeah, listen, Vince Vaughn has nailed this role as Funkhauser's cousin, and it's been a great addition to the later seasons of Curb.
I honestly thought, because he, you know, they really never showed the Porsche too much, and the Porsche was very prevalent in this. I thought that Larry was going to make him crash his Porsche and then fake, like, a full body something. Like, I really thought that's what he was going with. Yeah, maybe I should send him some notes.
Yeah, we saw the notes that were offered to him to read, and he passed them off on the high-ranking executive at Disney.
Oh my God! Yeah, this episode, and then honestly, like, it's to the point where it's like when Susie shows up for a wardrobe, she's got to be like, "Are you guys fucking kidding me?" What was she wearing?
I think she relishes it now. That's her.
The Guns N' Roses tutu with the fucking hat. Like, the hat, I would be like, come on, guys, the hat, really?
And of course, because there's nothing she won't do. And it's Susie. There's only one Susie.
Did you see that clip of Larry going at it with, what's the name of that other late night talk show host? Maybe.
There's a couple of them. Who?
Seth something.
Seth Meyers?
Yeah, and Larry said he was going out to dinner to a Knicks game or something with Susie, and Meyers goes, "Oh, say hello for me," or something like that. Send her, you know, whatever people say. And Larry just looked at him and was like, "I'm not going to do that." And then they went into the whole thing, like he just gave him that look, and then everybody laughed. And then for about 5 minutes, they went back and forth on. He said, "Go say hello yourself," and all that shit.
It reminds me of the Seinfeld episode when
Jerry gives his, or George gives his, what is it, his regards.
Yeah, that was
not
it.
Not well wishes. It's just regards. Well, yes. Regards can mean anything. Well, it's not like you said hello. No, no, of course not.
That was pretty much it. I felt like I was watching either Curb or Seinfeld. More of a Seinfeld one that time. But, yeah, I mean, this season is electric. The other note I will take is, you know, obviously he passed away and they gave a little brief thing. I hope they do a little more towards the end. I think it was obviously a little abrupt. But Richard did not look good in this episode, and it kind of made me sad. It really made me sad.
It made me sad, too. And I mean, I wasn't sure if he was
hilarious that he was testing his material at an AA meeting, obviously.
Right. Which it did sound like he was really working the crowd. But, yeah, he looked frail. He looked really in rough shape. And in the previous episode, what was it, episode 3, when he's in the golf cart, I was thinking, you know, he's probably not going to stand up in any of the episodes once we heard about his passing. But he was on his feet for a couple of the scenes here. I do have to ask you this question, though, because you're soon to be a very happily married man. But if you were in a predicament where you have somebody tell you, like,
you're wishing divorce upon me right now?
Absolutely not. I was actually asking about how somebody can fudge what they do for a living based off of, like, the company they work for, they say they work for. So, obviously, Funkhauser's girlfriend says that she works at Disney. And he's thinking, oh, she's an executive at the office.
So this is like if Michaela told me she worked at NYP and she's getting her doctorate
and whatnot or something. Yeah, like, and anything that would, nothing.
Of course,
that
would change things. If that's what you're going to ask, I'd probably look at her a little different.
That would change things, right?
Of course it would. Of course it would. Yeah, I don't. I mean, it's like, again, it's like when she tells me stories about work, I would totally look at her different. Everything they were talking about there. I mean, I don't know, man. I'm not going to go any further than that. You're fucking setting me up here. I love my wife.
I'm not. I'm
and I would love her even if she was, you know, a recluse, I guess.
First of all, I was not signaling out Michaela.
Michaela, I love you, and I am the luckiest man alive to be marrying you.
And there's no doubt about that. But I was saying, just in a different hypothetical.
You trying to get me fucking divorced?
I'm not.
Who are you talking to from my past life? Huh?
I do think that happens, though, and I think that the natural inclination of anybody would be like, oh, you can't judge them based off their career or what they said. I was like, listen, if I said I did what I did and somebody thought that's what I was doing and then immediately it's like 1,000 times lesser than, I would expect the person I was invested in to be like, eh, I don't think so. I wouldn't even blame him for it.
Well, yeah, or you could just fake a very old disease.
Well, listen, if I'm going to go, it's going to be because of Groat's disease. There's no doubt about it.
You ever made any obscure excuses to break up with someone?
To break up with somebody? No. To get out of dates, for sure.
Oh, yeah. I mean, come on. We've all done that.
I mean,
that.
Everybody does that. But if I'm seeing somebody for a little bit, it's usually this isn't working out. But
yeah,
it's,
I haven't done it since like high school, college, you know.
Well, because you also got to make sure your story is super buttoned up. There can't be any cracks in that armor. You better be dialed into that.
Yeah, I don't think that far in advance. I'm like, yeah, they're out of my hair.
I could be pretty diabolical, but I've never had to use it.
Oh, you're a lucky man.
Yeah, I am, and I hope I never have to. But Groat's disease is where I'm going. Nobody's going to question that.
No.
All the different illnesses and shit. If I said 5 years ago or 6 years ago, hey, we're going to be suffering from COVID-19, everybody would be looking at you like, what the fuck are you talking about? So mm-hmm. Groat's could be the
people
next
still look at you like that, depending on who you talk to.
That's a very good point out of you.
Yeah, not hopefully not my friends, but, you know, whatever. But yeah, it was another great one. This season, I don't know. I haven't checked any reviews. I'm trying to make my own opinions on it for this show. I'll read the reviews after I'm done watching the season. But for me, this season is on quite a heater.
I'm really enjoying it. And what I like about it is I'm in the minority of where I actually really enjoyed the final season of Seinfeld. the last few seasons, really, when Larry was off the show. And I know he came back and did the much maligned and very heavily criticized finale. I thought the finale was fine. You can't end a show of
every
that
finale. Everybody hates every finale. Honestly, like, what's, can you, maybe we should do an episode about the best finales, because there's really not that many. I'm the only one I can think of that I truly liked. I think Mad Men tied it together pretty good, and Breaking Bad, just because everybody knew the ending before you even knew the ending.
Oh, you know, I've never seen it, so I can't comment.
What?
But
what?
Yeah, I've never seen Breaking Bad.
Oh, Jesus, Lord Almighty. Well, I'm going to have to talk to Mike Phillips. I got to see if Will's a Breaking Bad guy. He watches weird shows, so he might not be either. But
might be.
I got to talk to Phillips.
You know, the Sopranos finale, I think that startled everybody. Nobody knew what the fuck.
Well, you know what? At the end of the day, the Sopranos finale, you're right. At the time, I didn't watch it at the time. I don't remember how old I was, but like, the fact that it's still talked about to this day, I could make a good case that it might be the greatest ending ever, or it might be the worst.
It brought back Don't Stop Believing. That song was dead. Now you can't hear that song without thinking of that final shot.
That is true. I meant more like people are still like arguing about it to this day, which, you know, some artist once said that if everybody loved your art, it's not really art. If not, I said it.
Just make sure you're giving anybody credit. But listen, I think overall, Larry's ending this season the way he wants to end it. And he does not give two shits about what any critics say or what anybody feels.
And that's why it's the best.
People love Larry. Exactly. And the people that love Larry and Curb overall are going to like it. I guarantee you, when we talk about the finale, we're going to speak about it with reverence, because we're going to miss the fact the show's now done. But he's going to end it the way he wants to, and it's probably going to be good.
It will be, man. I have no doubts in my mind. RIP again to Richard Lewis. It's going to be tough watching him on any future episodes, but I really enjoyed it.
I'm just happy he was able to do it, man. That's how I felt watching this episode. Like, for whatever he gave in that final run there, I'm happy he was in it, and I know Larry is probably super appreciative of it as well.
No doubt about it. All right, everybody, we will be talking to you tomorrow a lot, so stay tuned.
You guys got us all weekend. Take care, everybody.